And the fourth one is the general relativistic ray tracing scheme. And concerning the equations of state, we have Latimus-Vesti's equation of state with three different incompressivity and also with the EOS bias chain. So having these microphysical toolkits in hand, I would like to talk about several lessons we have recently learned in everlasting day and night, unhealthy trial error debugging procedure to implement these microphysics in a supernova court. The first one is about the IDSA scheme. And as Matthias already explained, the good point of this scheme is it can reproduce the 1D Boltzmann result well, and it can save the computational time, say about 100 times faster than the canonical Boltzmann solvers. And this scheme is good for the first generation 3D simulations. But a possible drawback or weak point in this scheme at present is that heavy lepton neutrinos such as mu x have not been included. And they should affect the post-bounce dynamics. So of course the best way is to implement the heavy lepton neutrinos in the IDSA scheme, but not yet done. And of course the ultimate goal of radiation transport is the multi-angle simulation done by Christian Nott or Sumiyoshi-san recently. But these nice schemes may be too computationally expensive at present in 3D simulations. So we treat cooling by heavy lepton neutrinos by the following three schemes, either by leakage or flux energy integrated flux limited diffusion or M1 closure scheme. And here is you can see a basic equations of M1 based neutrino transport scheme. Here is recently a nice paper by Margin and Thomas. And in the M1 closure schemes, one needs to solve up to the first order moment of the Boltzmann equations. But as you see, these equations are not closed. This is a EFFP. E nu is a radiation energy of neutrino and F is a radiation flux. So to close this closure and this kind of, you know, pressure tensor is determined, is assumed. Here is EP is a function of radiation energy and flux. And here is a Eddington factor and Eddington sensor and flux factor. So just taking the diffusion limit, the flux factor is zero and Eddington factor is distance drops and P nu is 1/3. And distance drops, so it's about 2/3, and so the radiation pressure is 1/3 of the radiation energy. This is actually a diffusion limit. And by taking the streaming limit, the flux factor is 1, so radiation pressure becomes radiation energy. It's equal to radiation energy. So likewise, the flux limited diffusion scheme, the M1 schemes bridges these two extremes. And this scheme, I mean, the M1 scheme should be better than the flux-limited diffusion scheme because M1 scheme can be used in general relativistic simulation because diffusion-type equations in the flux-limited diffusion can lead to causality violations. And there is two procedures in evolving the radiation variable like radiation energy and the radiation flux. This is an example of neutrino electron-type neutrino captured on the neutron, and this is an evolution equation of radiation energy. This is a radiation and evolution of the radiation flux. So it's important to write the right-hand side of the Boltzmann equation in a form that is proportional to radiation energy and radiation flux. We solve it in a Newton-Raphson method in an implicit way. And the second step is to adopt these quantities by the characteristic speed, which can be rather than straightforwardly like this. Here I would like to show you some preliminary results of the neutrino luminosity obtained in the M1 scheme. This is for nu E, nu E, anti-nu E, and nu X. And this is a 1D Boltzmann result obtained by Riemendelfer et al. 2003. So comparing these two panels, the M1 scheme can reproduce overall trend, which is closely in agreement with the Boltzmann result. And more detailed comparison between these two schemes will be given in our forthcoming study. Okay. Okay, here is a picture of my pet in the Waterloo Hotel. This is very gorgeous hotel. And something very weird is on this picture. Can you see? No. Here is. Oh, it's very difficult to see. Here is Sassy mode in 2D. It's difficult to see. I'm sorry. Oh my. It's too dark. In the wooden panel, you can see the Sassy like asymmetric Sassy mode. Anyway, going to 3D is very important. Oh, I should. Okay, so just let me show you our 3D preliminary result done with Tomoya and Yudai. This is for the 11.2 solar mass, and the numerical resolutions are very coarse, 300 for the radial, 32 for the lateral, and 64 for the diffusal direction, and 20 for the neutrino energy. This is for the non-rotating case, and this IDSA plus means nu E and nu E bar is solved by the IDSA scheme, and nu X is solved by the leakage scheme in this animation. Okay, let me see. This is a color scale is for entropy per baryon. And at around 60, you can see bounce here, and you can see the convective motion. It's, can you see? And you can also see the low mode oscillatory behavior of the standing accretion shock. And this is a final time snapshot of my simulation. It's about 300 kilometers in radius. Okay, so these two movies show the pressure perturbations. It's delta P over P, and this animation shows the sketch of streaming line seen from the polar observer. And from this animation, you can see the generation of pressure wave going out from the center to the behind the storage shock, which pushes the storage shock into explosion. This is a genuine feature of the SASI. And also you can see the from the streaming line, this is seen from the polar axis. So you can see that a lot of non-asymmetric motions in 3D simulation. You can see a very complex matter motion in the phi direction. Is delta P. It's a deviation from the average, for the lateral direction. And I'd like, as you know, the energy conservation should be kept in very good accuracy for reliable supernova simulations. And you can see a number of lines, and this is a energy as a function of after bounce, and this is for gravitational energy and thermal energy and kinetic energy. Important here is a green line. This is the energy conservation in our previous simulation. The violation is about 10 to 50 ergs, and the obtained explosion energy is about 10 to 50 ergs, so this result is a little bit, okay. This result may be not so reliable, but after we use a prescription detailed in the Bernhardt-Müller's paper, the energy conservation becomes smaller than violation of total energy becomes smaller than 10 to 49 ergs. So this may not so bad. So second lesson I'd like to deliver is Bernhardt's recipe is very helpful, at least in multi-D simulations. Okay, so this may be beyond the topic of this workshop, but I would like to ask, is it easy or not easy to obtain explosion in 3D than in 2D? I think Nordhaus will say yes, and I will discuss this point. This is you can see the motions of test particles in our 3D simulations, seen from the polar axis. So you can see a very complex matter motion that occurs in the non-axisymmetric way. And this figure shows a number of test particles in the gain region as a function of their advection time scale. The red line is for 2D, and the green line is for 3D. So you can see that the advection time scale for 3D becomes longer than 2D, as you see here. So I think for working the neutron heating mechanism, I think 3D effects may help. But this is our 2D result. So, but for the hydrodynamic point of view, it may be more easier for 2D to produce explosions than in 2D, than in 3D. This may be because matter motions can be concentrated along a special direction. But in 3D systems tends to be rather spherical. So for the hydrodynamical point of view, 3D might be not so good. And I think I talked with Bronson, and he said that he's running 3D simulation, also Matthias, and people in the supernova community are all now moving on to the 3D simulation. So please stay tuned also with our simulation results. Okay. So the third lesson is about the equation state. And now I'm showing you two 2D results of a 15 solar mass progenitor by Uzre Fever 1995. The left panel is for the model with LS-US of the incompressibility of 180 MeV. And the right-hand side of this panel is just a zoom up in the central region. And the right animation is for the exchange equation of state. Let's see how it goes. As you see, this is IDSA simulation without new X. And you can see shock revival leading to explosion for this equation, but not for Shen, at Shen. We waited about 700 milliseconds after unbounce, but we did not obtain explosion for this model. So when I get this result, a nice figure by Marek and Thomas came up to my mind, showing that the explosion energy is more easier to obtain for the softer equation state. And this is a preliminary 2D result showing the average shock radii as a function of post-bounce time. And in our 2D simulation, we obtained explosion for every Latimer-Swestis equation state. This is for 180, and green line is 375. But for the exchange equation state, we didn't obtain explosion. So I don't know why, but I talked with Evan. This is a nice figure taken by Evan O'Connor and Ott, showing that the efficiency of the neutron heating for making successful explosion should be higher for the Shen equation of state than the Latimer-Swestis equation of state. So these two results seems compatible. So the third lesson I would like to deliver is that the laws of symmetry energy in the supernova dynamics may still remain to be studied. So I'd like to hear thanks to Sumi, O'Connor, Fernandez, Gabriel, Matthias for yesterday's discussion over wine about this subject. Okay, 5 minutes, okay. So the final lesson we have recently learned is a neutrino pair annihilation reaction, which has been counted as a most important heating source in energizing collapsers. And here is a number of nice articles. And recently we proposed a general relativistic ray tracing method and to estimate the energy or momentum deposition due to the neutrino pair annihilation reaction. Here, the heating rate, we need to determine the neutrino distribution function of neutrino and anti-neutrinos. For the purpose, one needs to solve the neutrino distribution function in the curved space. Here is. And here is a Boltzmann equation in the curved space along the affine parameter, along the ray. And here is a source term, and here is a scattering term. But as you know, scattering term, scattering terms are generally energy coupling reactions, so it's very difficult to implement in the ray tracing methods still, so these reactions are neglected in our scheme. And by neglecting the scattering term, we can obtain the formal solution of the Boltzmann equations, and this is given by the book by Zink, Burkhardt, Zink. It's a formal solution. So to estimate the neutron heating rate outside the black hole, this is the ergosphere of the car, rotating car black hole. So we perform the backward ray tracing method. And for the red line, you can see that the rays are uniform. But for the green line, you can see some concentrations of the rate. So for casting ray as much as possible in the region where the intensity is very large, we adaptively cast the ray to such a region. So we propose that adaptive ray casting is very useful to save the computational time. But our general relativistic ray tracing method has some disadvantage. This means that scattering reactions have not yet been implemented. Okay, so by, you know, this is some analytic solution. So without the adaptive ARC, we cannot obtain the we cannot reproduce the analytic solution. But with this scheme, we can nicely reproduce the analytic solution. Okay, I have how many minutes do I have? 2 minutes or two? So this is just an application slide. And given a hydrodynamic data, we can estimate the neutron heating rate outside the black hole. This is the accretion disk. This is for the Newtonian calculation. This is a special relativistic one. This is a Schwarzschild. This is an extreme car. And this is a neutron heating rate along the rotational axis as a function of radii. And you can see that the neutron heating rate becomes highest for the Newtonian simulation without taking into account any relativistic effect. And this is a special relativistic effect due to the relativistic beaming, the neutron heating becomes smaller and then it recovers in the general relativistic environment. And this figure shows the advection time scale divided by the neutron heating time scale along the rotational axis. It could be larger than 10 at some point, so neutron-driven explosion could be also obtained in the case of collapse. So this is a summary slide. Cooling by nu x is being treatable in the IDSS scheme, either by leakage or Gray-Mann scheme, and a good second lesson is a good energy conservation in multi-D simulation can be obtained by the recipe in Bernhardt's paper. And symmetry energy may hold a key importance to solve the supernova puzzle, and ARC in the general relativistic ray tracing scheme reduces the computational cost significantly, but scattering reactions remain to be included, and this scheme would be very powerful in collapse simulation. So thank you very much for your patience.
Time for questions for Kay.
In your calculation of the neutrino annihilation rate for the collapsar case, do you include charged particle reactions heating from the disk material?
Of course.
So do you find any type of wind being driven from the disk?
Yes, we use data from our hydrodynamic simulations, and based on it, as you said, we also include the charged current reaction, not only, you know, not limited to the pair annihilation reaction, right? But charged current, only the charged current interactions are included, plus.
Okay, because one of the concerns I always have with this neutrino mechanism is that you're going to drive a lot of baryons off the disk, and they're going to pollute the outside.
You are right, but... Oh, excuse me. But if we wait long after black hole formation, material in the polar funnel absorbed to the black hole, the density becomes lower, the dynamical time scale is longer.
Okay.
And if I see you can.
Okay, so yeah. Then you can get a clean. Also.
Other questions?
So this is a question also for Matthias about the IDSA and the M1 approximation. Could you comment on the quality of what you think is better, actually? Is it better to do IDSA, or would it be better to do, you know, a multi-energy group M1 approximation? Because you could, you know, it's a lot better than multi-group flux-limit diffusion because you have the second moment, then you use the analytic closure, which is actually relatively good. Mm-hmm. The question is it better to do this, or should one do IDSA?
I should say, but I think that, you know, by the M1 scheme, we can capture the anisotropy more correctly than IDSA, you know. Anisotropy of the radiation, because in the IDSA scheme is a ray by ray, but in the M1 procedure, we can more accurately estimate the anisotropy of the radiation field. So I think this is a merit for the M1.
So the way to go seems then to do multi-energy group M1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Multi-energy group, yeah. So you are talking about the multi-energy group M1 versus IDSA,
yes.
Right? I think so. This is my comment. I think M1 could be a little bit superior to the IDSA, right?
Yes, I would agree with that. The M1 would be superior to the IDSA, yes, for the results. There is one effect. If you are close to the neutrino spheres, then it's important to have the full geometrical shape, view onto the neutrino sphere in your angles. Mm-hmm. And I think if you enhance your M1 by such a geometrical addition, then it would possibly be perfect. But the IDSA might be more efficient than an M1 in execution time. Mm-hmm.
Any more questions for Kay? If not, let's thank Kay again.